Now, we're going to carry this one over a little. There are those amongst us who've had trouble with this program and have come back. In my own experience, I've known quite a number of people in my years who have, after a while, decided that our meetings were necessary, that they had learned their lesson, and that they no longer needed to get into these meetings, and that they would practice the principles in their own way and not attend meetings. And for those whom I have known who have done this, in a period of 90 days, the light goes out of their eyes. Something happens to them. The light goes out of their eyes. And after a period of years, for instance, when I first came in, there was a chap who was most active. He was an attorney. He was disbarred. He went completely to hell in a handbasket. And he got into AA, and things happened, and he got back reinstated. And he did a great work in AA. But he became very successful. And he became the president of a building and loan. And he pretty gradually got out of, and has been pretty much out of AA for quite a number of years. About 2 years ago, he showed up with Wayne Harper at the Laguna Beach meeting. And I took a look at the guy and I thought, my God, old Moses has been drunk. He looked just exactly like a guy who had been drunk for a month or two and was just coming back. And I felt very bad for him. But I was glad he was back. And after the meeting, I asked Wade. And he says, no, he hasn't been drunk. But he looked just like a civilian. Dead fast. Now, what about these so-called slips? What do we do about them? We're alcoholics. I'm an alcoholic. And again, I can't live and drink, and I can't keep from drinking. Now, there's a way that a lot of people are keeping from drinking. A lot of people. And it's spelled out for us. And it's important enough to me that I do it. Because I don't want to get drunk anymore. I would do this if I hated every one of you guys. And hated this program. I would still be in here trying to work it. Because I can't drink, and I can't keep from it. Well, fortunately for me, I love the program, and I love its people. And it's no chore for me. But if something got important enough, and if I got to hurting bad enough, I'd get drunk again. I'm no different than I ever was. Not a bit different. I'm the same me that I always was. And if I hurt, I would drink. Now, I said a so-called slip. I rather doubt if there's any such thing as a slip. After a guy has once found the program, I don't think there are any slips. I think we fail the program and get drunk. we don't do the things we're supposed to have done. Now, I am excluding, for the moment, those who get drunk before they have found themselves in the program. I think we have one such with us tonight who's been around a while, but hasn't really, maybe even yet, maybe today he might have really decided he wants what we have and become willing to go in and get it. But I don't think before today he's ever really been convinced that there's nothing ahead of him but insanity or death. Or a way to live on crude alcohol. And so I don't count this, because he hasn't yet found this way of life. But after we've found it, we have to then turn our backs on it before we can slip. There's an unwritten law, I am sure of it, in this fellowship of ours that says, inasmuch as I am alive because a drunk had time to share his experience, faith, and hope with me, my only right to keep this thing is that I also have time to share my experience, strength, and hope with anybody who wants it. Anytime, any place, anywhere. Now, supposing that I have another lesson to learn that includes this, what then am I going to do about it? I've had 17 months of this way of life, and no man can take this away from me. Even a drunk can't take this 17-year period away from me. So I still have it. But I can't come back and start where I left off. This is the thing that's so difficult, and this is the reason that our percentage is so low of those who have been sober for 5 years or more to ever come back and stay with our program. Now, under 5 years, the percentage is relatively high. But over 5 years, it's very low. Because our people want to come back and start where they left off. They want to come back and pick up the pieces. You can't come back and pick up the pieces. You come back and pick up the program right where you picked it up in the beginning. Starting with step one. Just exactly like the first approach to AA, we must come back to it with the same approach, starting at step one and going right down the line, just like we did in the first place. I don't know how many in this room remember the chap, the Texan that came in the same time I did. He was sober 5 years, and his wife was an alcoholic. And she too was sober. And we used to talk as a team back in the early days, and he was a great guy, and so was she. And they decided after 5 years that they knew enough to handle this thing on their own. They knew enough about the disease of alcoholism and about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and about themselves that they could run their own lives now, including controlled drinking. And they deliberately took themselves out of the program. And by George, they had us scared to death. Really, they did. Because they almost made it. Really. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years went by. And Kurt had a parking lot there in Beverly Hills, and we'd go by and see Kurt, and how you doing, Kurt? Fine, fine. Everything's wonderful. 4 years. He and Pat controlled their drinking. And the fifth year, they went to hell in a breadbasket. They went clear to hell. Fast. That was 10 years, and this is 7 years later. And to the best of my knowledge and belief, Kurt has never made it. He came back, and I'll never forget the first time that he came back to Beverly Hills Tag. And he says, Chuck, if you think it was tough coming the first time, try it again. He says, this is just like coming back to a mansion you once owned and sneaking up to the back door and asking for a handout. He says, this is a toughie. And the last I knew, Kurt had never gotten back yet. And his poor wife, Pat, many of you will remember Manuel Reyes. Manuel was a great, great guy. He had cancer. And right up till the very time he died, he knew he was dying of cancer, and he was still out carrying the message till he died. And he wasn't afraid. And I was to talk at Manuel's funeral. And it was on a Saturday, and everybody loved him to death. So there were several hundred people there. And just before I went in, a guy came by and slipped me a little clipping out of a paper. And it says, woman who was failure at life was success at suicide. And this was Pat, Kurt's wife. She'd taken her own life. So you see, we are in a pretty serious business. We can't run our own lives. We can't keep from drinking. We could have done this thing, gentlemen. We would have done it before we got here. We tried every way under heaven to beat this rat. And all the man-made remedies that there are, we tried. And we could not beat it. And we came here, and by the love and sharing of a bunch of drunks, and by the grace of God that makes this possible, we found a way to live without drinking. And it's a serious business. And we didn't do it. Something did it. And so, I think that it's up to us recognizing this to thank God for the privilege that we have of carrying the message and carrying it as long as we have breath within us. And if then by some reason we do have a detour, that we have the grace to read the lesson and come back and start at the very first step, right at the beginning, and pick up the program and do the same things over that we did in the first place and come back and stay. That's a long discourse on that one little question, but I wanted to talk a little about it. Now, if there are any comments, gentlemen, I'd like to hear. I do not care to do all the talking.
I felt the same way you do. It tears me to pieces. I moved mine down to 1 year. somebody on a few weeks or a few months, well, he's going to get back on it and it'll be fine. But after a year, it's been my observation, it's rough as a cob for him to come back and really make her stick.
No, I've talked to myself about that quite a bit. It seems to me that a person who comes in and out, each time he drifts away, no matter what, how long he's been in or how short a time, he chips away a little of the badges of things. He reduces his own confidence in it. And I think this habitual coming in and going out eventually, the person will lose his status to that individual in both cases. I mean, that's the way I see.
I think that explanation of coming back and picking up the program, this is the second time I've heard that this month before, like, rather than trying to pick up the pieces, I think that's the whole thing. The guy comes in, tries to put it back together, but if you didn't put it back together, just to start scratch.
That's a certain amount of work on when you're working with people who are coming back. A new idea from the young man.
Well, I am one of those guys. I had 13 months.
That's the reason the list of things right now.
Every list goes and it's rough. I have to start right from the first.
Right from the first. Now let's look at this thing again. Just from this one little premise. I was talking up in the valley outside of Bakersfield. Little town up there with two names, and I can't think of the names. Lost something or other. And they told me that there was an Indian girl up there that was just coming up for her birthday. And she had been so excited about my coming. But she'd taken drunk. And she was in cycle. And they wanted to know if I'd stay over and go see the lady. And I did. And I went out the next morning, and they let me in their little cubicle. Nothing but a cot, and a commode, and no knob on the inside of the door. And she was lying there on that cot, crying, just crying her heart out. And she was ashamed to look at me. She laid with her face to the wall. And she was so ashamed. And she would sob out that she let the program down. She let her sponsor down. She let God down. And she was so ashamed. And I tried to tell her the difference between humiliation and humility. These words sound like they were cousins anyway, but they shouldn't even be in the same dictionary. Humiliation and humility. Humiliation is a hurt ego, a wounded pride and shame. This is humiliation. Humility, on the other hand, has nothing to do with ego. It has nothing to do with pride or shame. It has a dignity and a value that is indescribably wonderful. A dignity and a value that comes from the knowledge that it isn't I, but the Father in me, he doeth the works. And it is indescribably wonderful. It has nothing to do with personal accomplishment of any kind at all. It's the seeing that it isn't I, but the Father in me, he doeth the works. It's terrific. Now, if we then have the humiliation, the shame that we have let a sponsor down, or the program down, or God down, you see, this is still something that we thought we were doing. We thought we were doing a pretty good job. We believed our press notices. And so, there's the shame, the humiliation. But to see this thing as it is, as the necessity to learn another lesson, and to learn that lesson and start over. There is no need for humiliation or shame or a wounded pride or a hurt ego. It's normal for an alcoholic to be drunk. It's not normal for an alcoholic to be sober. And we are sober not by our own efforts, but by the grace of God through the miracle of AA. And we can pick up the program, and we can go just like we did in the beginning, or maybe better for having had this experience, if we learn the lesson. There's nothing in me that wants to judge a man or a woman that don't grab this program and run with it, or that have trouble with it. Because I know that until I had found this way of life by fulfilling certain conditions, that there was nothing in the world that could have taken me out of that shame and that wounded pride and that hurt ego and that humiliation and that damnable necessity to win this thing on my own. You know? This is a point that we should see very, very plainly. Particularly now that we have our big conferences and so many groups try to build on name speakers. This is one of the worst things that could happen to us, either as a society or as individuals. This is heady wine. There are few people that can stand the circuit. Really, there are few that can stand the circuit, because it's just sort of normal for us to get to believe in our press notices. You know? And it's the most dangerous thing in the world. And so many of our big speakers, I'll take our beloved Paul, probably the best speaker that ever came out of this country. 15 years. I think he was the first man in California, apart from our founder, Bill, who ever got a standing ovation in California, in AA. Paul had 15 straight years. And he got to the point where he was going out to do it for the drugs. 2 years ago Christmas. He had a drink and it didn't last two months. And he was dead after 15 years. This is one of the great, great hazards. I thought for a little while it was going to destroy my beloved Jack sitting right over there. I really did. I was concerned. And when I saw Jack at his 10th birthday, he was as different a man as he was the last time I'd seen him, as if I'd never seen him before. Did you know that, Jack?
No.
It was wonderful when I saw you for your 10th birthday.
Leveling off?
Huh?
Leveling off?
Maybe remembering that from whence this thing came. You know, Jack? Jack's been a wheeler and dealer all his life. He's been president of the junior chamber and the advertising club and everything else. And he was a pretty popular boy in our society. It still is, and going to be more popular. But he had me worried a little bit. Now, let's just look at this thing one more minute, and we'll go for another question. There's one. There's somebody here from Omaha. I went to Omaha a while back, a couple of years ago, three maybe. And I'd never talked in Omaha. And to my knowledge, I'd never met any of the bunch. And it wasn't an hour after I gotten into town until there were a half a dozen or maybe 10 couples sitting with me, yakking. And every one of them were telling me about me. This one says, I heard you at Oklahoma City, and you said so-and-so, and it was my key. This one says, I heard you at Amarillo. This one says, I heard you in St. Louis, and so on. And they were just going. And pretty soon, one of these old boys says, Chuck, how do you live with this kind of thing? Here is a bunch of people that, as far as you know, you've never seen, and they're all just eating you up. How do you live with it? And I says, don't pay any attention to it. And I tried to duck it, and he says, that's not satisfactory. He says, tell me, how do you live with it? And I says, don't pay any attention to it. If it's good, I laugh, and if it's bad, I laugh. And he says, that's not satisfactory. Now tell us how you live with this thing. And I says, well, I'll tell you. If it was good, I didn't do it. And if it's bad, I don't want to hear about it. And this is the only thing they remember in Oklahoma, in Omaha. This is the only thing they remember. They were going around there for 2 days saying, if it's good, I didn't do it. And if it's bad, I don't want to hear about it. And this is the only way that I can figure this thing at all. If it's good, I didn't do it. You see, I know what I did in my life. I know exactly what I did in my life. And I take the credit for the first 43 years. You can give me all the credit for that. And I not only went in the hole, I pulled a hole in after. Now, in this 17 years, I can take no credit. I'm alive because the drunk had time. And whatever the change is in my life is not of my doing. It is of this great thing. And it's not I, but the Father within. He doeth the work. You know, this is one of the reasons I can laugh all the time. And do. After I was sober for 4, 5, 6 years, trying to read the lessons out of this deal, it finally occurred to me that they had said to the carpenter, good master, good master. And he said to him, why callest thou me good? There's none good but one, and that's the Father. And if this didn't take all the incentive out of trying to be good for something, you know? Why callest thou me good? This was the greatest guy that ever wore shoe leather. And he says, why callest thou me good? There's none good but one, and that's the Father. And they said to him, how do you do these things? And he says, boys, go pen your papers. I don't. Of myself, I can do nothing. It's the Father within. He doeth the works. So who am I to think I can do something? Of myself, I'm a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk, writhing in the floor. That's me. Without this thing, and with this thing, completion. And so all I can do is thank God and pass the ammunition. Next question. Do you assume that the person who answered your initial A call is your sponsor? Or should you wait and select a sponsor of your own choice? Somebody want to answer?
On the first blush of the thing, there's some question already, or he wouldn't have asked the question. So the answer to that would be select your own. Three things I've asked. Have two or three?
I can tell you a little story that happened to me. I made an original call on a person. It took me quite a few meetings. And he just sat and waited for me to come and get him things in the meetings. I got a little perturbed at him. I don't know. There he had three automobiles in the driveway and called up with instructions as to where I was going to take him that night. Anyway, I did take him. So he dropped off going to the meetings a little bit. Anyway, he got drunk and called me one night while he was drunk. Told me he didn't think too much of him. Next time I saw him about a month later, he was back in the meeting. He looked just as happy as he had just said. Called me off the side. He said, Jim, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you this before anybody else tells you. And I said, all right, Bob, tell me. He did. He said, you know, he said, I got to think about you. He said, I don't think you were a very good sponsor for me. So he said, what I did is, he said, I called the central office and I got me a new one. So I kept a straight face as well as I could until I got out of there. This is just what he should have done. Just what he should have done.
Well, Chuck, I'd like to relate what happened to me. Frank, as you know, is my sponsor. And he was the one that made the initial call. And after we had gone to three meetings in Frank's home, he hadn't, well, of course, at that time I was in his home. But after this, like, he'd have me come down to his home about an hour before the meeting and sit there and let me empty everything that was on my chest and everything that happened that day. And we'd all go back to his home after the meeting and have another meeting after the meeting. And I remember Frank on the third night coming from Signal Hill. And on the way down his house, he said, Jack, I want to tell you something. I made the initial call on you, but I have something I would like to suggest, and that is that you look around. You look around, take your time, and pick out someone that you would like to have a sponsor. That you would like to have a sponsor. Be your sponsor. Now, this was terrific, I thought. And the reaction was terrific. Well, of course, what it did in this case, it made me much closer to Frank. Then when I got to the point where I was doing fellow step work, I was afraid to let these babies talk to everyone else for fear they would get them off the track. And after I'd been around and grew up a little bit, I knew this was absolutely wrong. So I started using the very same thing. Now, even though I made the initial pump, look around and pick out somebody, and many of them did, and they're sober and they're on the program today. And I think this is the approach, or I mean, I think this is one of the approaches.
Don't you think we all are each other's sponsors? I get as much out of every person in every room, I think, as my original sponsor's drunk now anyway, but and I can't help. I mean, I've tried, not that I ever did, but I tried to carry the message back to him, and I can't get across. He lives down your way, by the way. You know him, Dave. The sponsor idea, I think, to me, just kind of swoops up and moves into the whole organization, and we're each other's sponsors. I get more out of Harold, which is 10 years younger than my sponsor. Yeah, 20 years, or 18 years, or, well, it doesn't matter anyway. And then I ever got out of my sponsor, and he is a third the age of my sponsor would have been, or fourth. So I think we sponsor each other.
Well, I figure that I've got a lot of sponsors. I've got a book with addresses. I have never everyone I've ever called on. When I can't get hold of one, I get hold of another.
How long do you consider yourself as a personal sponsor? I mean, how? When you turn them loose. Solo.
I have never had a baby in Alcoholics Anonymous.
You've been a sponsor, though.
I don't mind anybody else using the term. It don't bother me in the least. But I have never used it in my own thinking or partyance in the 17 years I've been here. Because I'm afraid I'll get to thinking that I've had something to do with your sobriety.
I slipped on that a moment ago, and I didn't mean it that way, and I corrected you. Remember?
Yes. I'm not criticizing anything.
Yeah, no, but it was...
Eddie Boland will get up and say, this is my baby, that's my baby, that's my baby, and these two down here are their babies, and they're my grandsons, and he'll... And it's all right for him. It's all right for him. But I cannot do it. I have never used the term in my life. Now... I am never anybody's sponsor unless they ask me to be. I have many people who ask me if they can have me as their sponsor, and I tell them yes. And that I will do anything that they want me to do. And I try to do the best I can, but I cannot feel any ownership at all. And I got to tell you a little story about this. But you say, how long? If anybody asked me to be a sponsor, before I want them to release me, if they've asked me, I want to give them the entire story of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to take them first through the getting sober, the getting away from the first drink, and how important it is that we just decide to die if we have to, rather than to take that next drink. Because if we would rather be dead than to take it, we'd either have to die or take it. Something happens. And we go through the initial stages, and then through the group stage, and then through the inner group stage, and then the entire history of our society, and the general service stage, the inner group office on the international level. I think sponsorship carries with it the necessity to go clear through the whole story, explaining everything in it, including money. We're so goddamn spiritual, we're afraid to talk about money, you know. You see? Money has a very definite place in our society, and we should tell our people what the money is spent for and how it goes and what it does and the necessity of putting in the dough in the basket and of supporting our intergroup offices and our international intergroup office. This is all a part of sponsorship. And I would never release anybody, just as I would never take anybody. I don't even assume when I make the initial call. And lots of times it's cold turkey. I am not opposed to cold turkey calls. I don't believe that we have to wait till somebody asks. I knock on the door. Many, many of them, I knock on the door. And it's surprising what happens. But the point I'm trying to get over is to make the job thorough and to have no ownership in it whatsoever. Feel no credit is due you for sponsorship. If we take the credit for a man's sobriety, we've got to take the failure as our own. And this is no good. Now let me tell you a little story. I'm in Monroe, Louisiana. I guess it's 3 weeks ago, for their 17th anniversary. And there's an old boy who is Texas from the top to bottom. Comes over from Odessa. He lives in Odessa, and he's a slow, easy kind of guy. And after the meeting on Saturday night, we went out to somebody's house. And when it came time to go back to the motel, we got in the car, and it was his car. He was driving. And he says, Chuck, he says, you remember that old red-faced boy that I brought over to the meeting the last time you were down here? He says, I paid that son of a bitch's hospital bill to get him out to come and hear you talk. And he says, I have been wet nursing that son of a bitch for 2 years. He says, I had got him out of more scrapes and spent more money on him. And said that son of a bitch had puked on everything I owned. He said, I had me a new pair of shoes and he puked in them and ruined them. And he said, you know something? That son of a bitch has been sober ever since he heard you. He said he just had his first birthday. And he wanted me to give him a lighter with the Serenity Prayer on it. And I said, if you want a lighter, you go to Laguna Beach. And he said, do you know what this has taught me? He said, I ain't never going to try to tote the message anymore. He says, I'm going to find out where the message is and tote the alcoholic to the message. Well,
by the time he'd gotten his face told, I was hurting every point of it. I just pretty nearly died. I never laughed so hard in my life. He wasn't going to talk the message anymore. He was going to find out what the message was. And he told the alcoholic confession.